It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a comeback story about a special band of horses.
Thousands of Ojibwe horses once roamed in the northern United States and Canada in the early 20th century. But the rare breed almost disappeared by the late 1970s. Then recently, a descendant of the White Earth Nation rescued six Ojibwe horses and gave them a home in northwestern Wisconsin. WPR's Danielle Kading brings us this story about Emily Lorzel and the Humble Horse Organization, which aims to keep the rare breed alive.
I know, Mama. Wujudinoimaganaduk, na damage kwe indigenakaz, wabanisi indo dem, White Earth indigenakaz. Mit you or Ojibwe Anishinaabe Kwe mit you. So that's a traditional Ojibwe protocol greeting. My name is Emily Lorzel. I founded this, and my husband and I, we both live on site, so we attend to all of the daily needs of the herd, including things like fundraising and outreach and stuff like that. But it's a volunteer-ran organization, so we don't get paid for anything that we do. All the donations go straight back for the horses. A part of our mission here at the Humble Horse is to preserve the breed and to hopefully one day repatriate them back to Anishinaabe communities.
Itchy.
In Anishinaabe culture, if you don't have a name, your ancestors can't find you. So we gave everybody Anishinaabe names. That's Nojimo, or we call her Jimmy. And that's Dimi, but we call her Mama. And then there's Baswewe, which is Echo. And then this is Nimki. Well, I guarantee you, once you start giving him pets, he will stalk you to the end of days, because he is like, hi, Mama. Just the friendliest. I have an Auntie Siobhan Marks and a Uncle Mark Denning. Uncle Mark actually grew up with these horses, or he grew up with ponies, these small little ponies in the forest, right? I learned about these horses from him, and he would always tell me that his dream was to see these horses back in Wisconsin, because as he was growing up with them, they eventually kind of disappeared. What we do know is there were only about four left in 1976. The last stallion was shot by a non-Indigenous researcher who thought he was a moose in the 1960s. So with only four mares left in 1976 and the Canadian government saying, these guys are a public nuisance, we're going to destroy them, four members from Fort Boys and Lac La Croix nations got together in the middle of the night, loaded these four mares up onto a horse trailer, actually border hopped over the ice. It's called Heist Across the Ice. And they found sanctuary in a farm in Minnesota. They were able to repopulate, and they were crossbred with a Spanish Mustang that was kind of the most phenotypically similar to the breed. So all of the horses today are related to those four mares. I didn't know we had horses until I was in my early 20s. And why is it that I didn't know about these horses until I was that age? These horses were so vital to our survival. And what's cool about it is it was a consensual relationship. We didn't have to keep them penned up. They would come back every year around the winter to help us check trap lines, haul logs. There's even stories of them pawing through ice to help with ice fishing. So because they helped Anishinaabe people survive and we consider them a relative, I guess my question would be, wouldn't you help your relative survive?
WPR's Danielle Kading brought us that story on Ojibwe horses. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowland Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Music. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now to what's known as the fake elector scheme. In a study of Wisconsin, this was the plan to reverse the outcome of the 2020 election, targeting seven swing states, including Wisconsin, where a slate of false electors were created, pledging support to former President Donald Trump in states he lost. The study explores a path for additional state criminal prosecutions. Join in on the fake electors tactic, how you want state law enforcement officials to handle it. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Shan Wu is a white-collar criminal defense attorney, former federal prosecutor in Washington, D.C., co-authored the report called Wisconsin Case Study, The Potential for State Prosecutions of False Electors. Shan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
The fake elector scheme attempted unsuccessfully in seven swing states. Why did you focus on examining Wisconsin?
Well, Wisconsin was one of the swing states, of course, and was important. And it seemed that the particular laws that we looked at were a good template for how different state laws could be used to criminally prosecute. That could be in conjunction with a federal prosecution as well, but it seemed like a good example. And it's, of course, you know, we're not prosecutors anymore. I'm not, and we're not Wisconsin prosecutors, but the idea was to pick an important state and show that there are existing tools that could be used.
Hours after the state Supreme Court confirmed Joe Biden's victory in Wisconsin, 10 Republicans presented themselves as a slate for Donald Trump. Can you explain, I mean, because you said that there are potentially numerous violations here, how do you see these individuals breaking state law?
Sure. And again, these are types of statutes which are by no means purely unique to Wisconsin. But to give an example, just a little bit of background on how they were doing the fake elector scheme. Importantly, it consisted of having what they felt was an alternative slate of electors. And in Wisconsin's case, they actually prepared the fake documents, and these were not the official ones, and they convened a group together in secret.
Was that the meeting at the Capitol on December 14th, 2020?
That is correct. And so in doing that, that gives rise to a number of possible violations under Wisconsin law. First of all, preparing these documents could be considered an act of forgery, because forgery, as we all think of in terms of forging a check, is you're putting out a fake check, or you're putting someone's name on it representing an authority which is untrue. So that's one possible violation. There's also the violation of falsely assuming to act as a public officer, that long title, but it sort of speaks for itself. And there's one of simulating legal process. And again, the name, as it suggests, is it's pretending to be a legal process, but in fact, it's not. So those are a few of the violations that can arise under Wisconsin law. And there's a few ones like conspiracy, as well as an attempt type crime. Those are generic, no matter what the substantive violation is. So you can conspire with someone to try to do something illegal, so that could be charged. And important to note here that in crimes, it does not matter if you succeed. So for example, to use an easy example, you can go try to rob a bank, and it's still gonna be a crime whether or not you succeed in robbing the bank. So here, were they to charge these as criminal violations, even though the plan didn't succeed, it could still be even charged as an attempt.
That helps, I think, paint a picture with that bank example, but that also leads to what's at stake here? What would have happened to the U.S. democratic process if the fake elector plot had succeeded?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's it could have had a very profound effect on the process, and it really could have changed the outcome of the election. But as you look at the big picture, particularly now that we have the full, well, almost the full findings of the January 6th committee, you can also see that part of the plan here was really to stall and to throw the process into disarray. So it wasn't so much that the plan was, oh, we're going to have these different slate of electors come in, and then the process is simply going to allow former President Trump to win instead of Biden. This was part of a process to basically stall and put the normal electoral college certification process into disarray, with the plan that they were banking on the idea that then Vice President Pence might step in and say, stop the count, meaning the Electoral College count, and hopefully put that into such chaos that perhaps it would have to go to the House to decide it, or as former President Trump seemed to believe, and some of their theories were, that Pence himself could act as a substantive decider of the election at that point. So the idea was to say, look, there's confusion here. This is the alternative slate. These people should be recognized. This is a scenario where they suggested, this is wrong and we can talk about it, but they suggested that there had been a previous precedent for that in the 1960 election with Kennedy in Hawaii. They tried to claim that there was a similar situation that had gone on, which is quite incorrect, and it was different. But the idea was to sow a lot of confusion so that that certification process could be stalled and hopefully, you know, in their view, changed.
Sowing confusion. Criminal defense attorney and former federal prosecutor Shan Wu co-authored this report on the fake elector scheme, using Wisconsin as a type of blueprint for how states could proceed in criminal prosecutions. Colin, with your feelings on whether there should be a criminal investigation into the efforts to overturn Wisconsin's 2020 election results, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We unpack the fake electors scheme, how to prosecute or not dozens of fake electors in seven states, including Wisconsin, who made a last-ditch attempt to keep former President Donald Trump in power. Colin, on how you think Wisconsin prosecutors should handle fake electors. The number is 800-642-1234. Shan Wu is a former federal prosecutor, now in private practice. He co-authored a Wisconsin case study on fake electors and stays with us. Let's bring in Jan in Green Bay. Jan, hi. What are your thoughts?
I'm just curious as to how they could not be prosecuted for less than a handful of people to change the vote for the people of Wisconsin has to be illegal. And I think that we have some politicians. I was told that one of the congressmen, before he left, helped set this up. Now, if that's true, why is he not being prosecuted? And our senator supposedly knew about this and was willing to go through with it till somebody started questioning it.
Jan, thank you. I just want to pause here and allow Shan to jump in, referring to U.S. Senator Ron Johnson there. Shan, what are your thoughts on, what would happen next time and the implications of other people who are not named as the 10 individuals?
Yeah, I think very good question with regard to what type of accountability is there for members of Congress who might have been involved. I think the January 6th committee did a really great job. The speed and how comprehensive the investigation was. Where it does seem a little bit light, though, is the focus on members of Congress and the fact that many of them who may have been involved, you don't have the kind of testimony you have from them as you did from members of the executive branch, Trump's inner circle, even though many of them may have tried to dance a little bit, were taking the fifth, et cetera. There's not as much scrutiny that's been put on members of Congress. Why that is, it's a little bit speculative. Maybe that, you know, Congress is not too good at necessarily investigating itself. And in terms of the prosecution issue, that's a very interesting legal situation. From a discretion standpoint, DOJ may be reluctant to take on members of Congress, certainly like their great caution in actually deciding whether to prosecute Trump or not. They really want all their T's crossed and I's dotted before they take on that type of investigation. From a state prosecution level, there could be some defenses that members of Congress try to raise. You saw that in the Fulton County, Georgia investigation that's going on, where, for example, some members tried to raise, you can't even question me because that's all part of my legislative process. Those efforts failed, but there are a couple more obstacles that could be raised when the state tries to prosecute or investigate federal officials. So that may account for some of the lighter treatment of that. But in terms of the culpability, once that evidence is developed, there's no reason why they shouldn't be looked at.
And as we see more of these transcript interviews coming out from the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack, we also saw they included in the report text messages from the former chairman of the Republican Party of Wisconsin, Andrew Hitt, worried about the fake elector plan. He still signed on as one of the 10 false electors. What are your thoughts on Hitt's reported doubts?
I think that his reported doubts were not uncommon. I think that they were aware of how much pressure was being exerted for them to do this. And as they began to actually do it, they were realizing, you know, that this could be illegal. I think the biggest reason for the doubt probably was the whole fact that they were meeting in secret. This was not something that looked like they were going to do a legitimate function. It didn't look like there was a big, massive legal dispute in Wisconsin at that point, and they weren't being above board in what they were doing. So I think quite naturally, anyone who is thinking will realize, you know, this does not smell too good at the moment.
Talking about the fake electors for Trump in Wisconsin in 2020 election, Shan Wu, D.C. attorney, former federal prosecutor, new case study on Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Andy is with us in Appleton. Andy, hi. What would you like to ask?
2 points, if I can squeeze them in. One is, usually when I go hunting, it takes hours and hours of preparation. When I actually pull the trigger for a harvest, it's a very small, but one of the most important parts of hunting. Ron Johnson tried to say he was only a traitor to democracy for 5 seconds as he tried to deliver the fake electors. But it's one of the most important parts. So I don't think that statement of only a short period of time gets him off the hook. As far as the fake electors go, this is my second point. I thought Michigan was prosecuting their fake electors at the local level.
You thought Michigan was prosecuting fake electors. Shan, can you first address that in terms of what other states are doing?
Yeah, I'm actually not familiar with that particular action that Michigan's taking. It's possible there's something going on, but I'm not familiar with that. Certainly, we all know that Georgia has been looking at Trump's effort to influence that. And as part of that, that special grand jury has included seeking testimony from a number of people, which would touch upon the idea of having an alternative slate as well. I do want to say that that analogy to the hunting harvesting is a very good one. Certainly someone cannot use a defense that says, oh, I was only part of this conspiracy for a moment, and that means that I should be not held accountable, particularly when the moment that you're part of it is such a critical one.
Just a moment here. If the U.S. Justice Department is acting on the dozens of fake electors, pouring over transcripts and other items the January 6th committee collected, then can Wisconsin be running like a parallel investigation into these same people?
Yes, they can be. And that is something that is actually quite common, because there are scenarios where the Justice Department and the state prosecutors will be looking at the same set of circumstances, but there are state crimes and federal crimes being investigated and perhaps ultimately charged, and they can certainly work in parallel. People may wonder, oh, would that be double jeopardy, that there's both a state prosecution and a federal? And it's not. It's not double jeopardy, because those are two separate sovereigns that are prosecuting. So that's not a double jeopardy issue. There's also situations where they won't work independently, each pursuing their own prosecutions, but there'll be a joint prosecution, joint task force, for example. We hear about that a lot in violent crimes, drug investigations, where the feds and the state people, you know, work together. So that's another possibility as well.
Shan, thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Happy to be here.
Shan Wu is a criminal defense attorney, former federal prosecutor in Washington, D.C., co-authored the report Wisconsin Case Study, The Potential for State Prosecutions of False Electors. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.